Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd here, as I mentioned. Thomas Drance has the day off. He'll be back tomorrow. I'm hosting solo for the first hour, and then at 1 o'clock for the final hour, Landon Ferraro will join me in studio. I am coming to you live from the Kintec studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome details at DunbarLumber.com. Joining me now with video call technology. I didn't even know we had that here in the studio. It's very exciting. From Hockey Night in Canada and the 32 Thoughts podcast, he is Kyle Bukauskas. Kyle, thanks very much for joining us today on a holiday Monday. How are you?
I'm good, Jamie. How are you doing? Yeah, not surprised. Producer Dom Shramati making magic happen again, bringing video to this segment.
The wizard, yes, as I'm sure you've gotten to know, hosting 32 Thoughts now and having Dom produce. So lots going on in the NHL, and actually already one game in the books today that got started early between the Habs and the Sabres, and Montreal wins a barn burner 7-5. And, you know, look, full credit to them for pulling out the win and getting the victory over Buffalo. But again, giving up five goals, and it just seems like they're playing a lot of this type of game so far this season. They're giving up a ton of goals. They haven't won that much like they did win today. But are you starting to get concerned that this type of hockey could have kind of long-lasting negative effects for Montreal, right, as they try to go through this rebuild and eventually become a contending team? It just feels like at a certain point, you got to start taking care of things on the defensive side of it a little bit better.
Yeah, it's a concern. There's no question. Like I know when we had them in Toronto on hockey night on Saturday, and Chris Cuthbert and Craig Simpson, they had a graphic that they showed there at one point during the game at just some of the key categories defensively. Mm-hmm. And Montreal was like either last or in the bottom third of like bing, 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 all these different bullet points. And that's not the spot you want to be in any of those, but let alone all of them. So, of course, that's a concern. And, yeah, what a wild game against Buffalo earlier today. Like, love Monday matinee hockey, right? You just never know what you're going to get. I mean, the lead changes, and you mentioned, like, 7-5 scoreline. Yep. I think so they gave up 5 on 18 shots. They scored 7 on 23 shots. Yep. And one of them was into the empty net, but unbelievable. Defense and goaltending seemed optional, both sides making goaltender changes at various points in the game. But I just think, yeah, not great you give up 5. They just needed to win in the worst way possible. So the fact that they had a lead going into the third and then all of a sudden, like, bang, bang, they were down 5-4, I thought, my gosh, like, they're going to do it again, another third period meltdown. They found a way to get 2 points, and they'll take that. Nick Suzuki getting going again offensively. Slafkovsky looked really good. So there's some signs there as to at least for them to grab onto, because offensively it's been, you know, as much of a struggle of late as it has been on the defensive side. I think, you know, when you consider the fact that Martin Saint-Louis has talked about, like, they dedicated a lot of time through training camp to D-zone coverage. So the fact that we're having this conversation here in the early stages of November, Jamie, I mean, yeah, that's a problem. So where do they go from here? I don't know. Like, we talked on the podcast today's episode, the drop. Like, Elliot made the point that he thinks that, you know, for Montreal, do you look at, you know, considering this season now with where they are and losing 6 straight, do you decide to go for a guy like James Haggins and try to give yourself a chance at another first overall pick? My only argument to that is, like, as tough as it's been for them, like, I'm just not sure, like, you know, they're showing signs clearly that they're not ready to be a playoff team yet, but I don't think this roster is bad enough to legitimately be in that hunt. Like, I live here in Ottawa, and you think about how tough of a season it was for them last year, but they weren't in a position to have a legitimate shot at Macklin Celebrini, right? Like, that's where I would see Montreal kind of being as well, if it kind of remains status quo the rest of the way here. So it's an interesting time, no question. I don't think they envisioned being in this spot this early on, but I mean, the fact is, with how tough as it's been for them, you know, outside of kind of the top 3 or 4 teams in the East that have come out of the gates, there's been a lot of kind of mediocrity and teams trying to find their footing through the rest of the conference. So it's not like they've completely put themselves out of the race as bad as the results have been here. So, but the most important thing was just to get a win and to try to get some traction again.
Yeah, and the point about, you know, do you kind of pivot and focus on the draft and James Hagans and all that? And, you know, they drafted Slafkovský first overall, 2022, right? So that's, you know, not that long ago, but this is his third season in the NHL. And I kind of think that, okay, it's great to go through a rebuild and, hey, we're going to bottom out, we're going to try to draft high. But when you're into the third season after you drafted first overall, I don't think you want to be thinking, you know, the plan isn't to be thinking about, okay, let's draft first overall again, right? The plan is, hey, at that point, we should be showing some progress. So I think that would be pretty tough for Montreal if all of a sudden they're back, you know, top three or something this year. Like, they're supposed to be leaving that stage of the rebuild, not hanging around at the top of the draft board again.
And I understand success is not linear with this stuff, especially when a team embarks on the rebuild, right? As much as you would love to say, like, there's a template of you bottom out, you get your first or second overall pick, and then by year three, you're this, right? It doesn't always work out that way. And we've seen countless examples of that around the NHL. Unfortunately, certainly in the cap era, how many teams are still in that rebuilding mode? How long did it take a team like Edmonton with all of their first overall picks to finally taste a bit of success? So that's a tough part as well. But yeah, I understand, like, you know, it doesn't guarantee anything, you know, a couple of years after picking first. I mean, obviously they've got a guy like Demidov that they're very excited about. He's coming. It's unfortunate that David Reinbacher, the defenseman, that was their first round pick 2 years ago, before, the year after Slafkovský, you know, he suffers the injury in the preseason. So there's another guy that you still think is part of their future once he's healthy again. But yeah, it's just a reminder that this is not an exact science in trying to go through this process as an organization. And I think part of why we're seeing in the Montreal market some frustration and some real criticism thrown at Martin Saint-Louis for the first time, being, as you mentioned, like, this is year three now since drafting first overall, but also them as an organization, like, they came out this year and said it themselves, not that, hey, we're going to be a playoff team. They didn't go that far, but at least say that we're entering a stage now where results do matter more. This is not so much about only process driven and seeing young guys develop and improve in their own way, even if the wins don't necessarily follow. You could tell there was a shift there with how their messaging was coming across out of the gate. And so when they were stuck in this spot here where, you know, they just ended a 6-game losing streak earlier this afternoon, you can understand why there's some people starting to question a little bit with the direction that they're headed.
And Kyle, you know, you mentioned you're based in Ottawa, and you talked about the kind of the very clogged middle of the standings in the Eastern Conference, right? And the three teams that we always seem to group together, right? The teams trying to get over that playoff hump: Ottawa, Buffalo, and Detroit. And you look at them all, and they're, you know, Ottawa 14 points in 14 games. Buffalo now dips just below 500, 15 points in 16 games. Detroit just below 500, 13 points in 14 games. They're all still right in that mix. And just focusing in on Ottawa, obviously, you know, Travis Green, former Canucks head coach, takes over there. What impact have you seen from Travis Green on the Ottawa Senators this year?
Well, I think there's just a different understanding and certainly much less tolerance from how, you know, their young, top offensive, exciting guys have to play with. You know, like, there was for a number of years there, when they first started coming in, I remember there was such a clamoring for just letting the kids play, understandably. But even if they're going to make mistakes, even if they're going to be on the wrong side of the puck the odd time, you know, at critical moments late in the game where you're trying to hang on to a lead, you need to give them a taste of just being in those spots so they can learn from it. And you can totally understand the thought there. But as time wore on, you know, and they got all, everyone got their big contracts, and everyone was saying the right things about taking a step and being better defensively. And it just didn't happen for a while. And there wasn't much consequence by way of, you know, what's the biggest bargaining chip that coaches have, right? It's ice time. Yep. And you didn't see that often with their top guys. When they had tough moments, when there was some poor decision-making, they always still saw the ice. And, you know, we haven't seen that quite yet, where, you know, Travis has had to go and to sit one of his top players for an extended period. I think part of that is because of the work he did in the summer in getting to know his players, and certainly for the heavy hitters up front, having those conversations about, like, I understand there's certain ways you like to play, but where has that gotten you? Like, you guys haven't been anywhere near a playoff spot in your time in Ottawa. And, you know, to the players' credit, they understood that and said, yeah, like, we've been as much of the problem as anything else. So having that as the foundation, I think, is a pretty good place to start. Certainly there has been and will continue to be growing pains for Ottawa. Like, you know, they had a couple of great results, you know, a couple of weeks ago. Like, they gave the Rangers everything they had on the road. Shesterkin was great. And then the next night here at home, they shut out Seattle. You thought there was some real momentum going their way. And then they get blown out by Buffalo, and they come here at home against the Islanders last week. And for an Islander team that has really struggled to get going offensively, partially because of the injuries, they spot them a 3-0 lead and wait too long before getting themselves back into the game. And, you know, you're seeing stuff like that, and you're like, all right, this is still, it's not an overnight success story for Ottawa, which is to be expected. But, you know, I think this is a team that is starting to play better defensively as a group under Travis Green. Certainly, you know, having a night in like they did in Boston, like that whole, when Tkachuk scores in overtime, the fact that everyone's coming off the bench there, obviously to celebrate with the captain, but everyone going to Allmark too, like that was a neat moment of like, here's a night where you really start to come together as a team, because you know how much that win meant to Allmark being back in Boston, and how much that meant to the team just to get going in the right direction again. And Stutzla actually joked after practice today, the other part was, I guess, Allmark put a ton of money on the board that night, so there was added incentive there. But so there's signs where you're going, they're starting to take some steps. You know, it doesn't feel like the wins that they have had this year is a mirage, but as you say, still through all of this, just a 500 hockey team. What they haven't been able to do quite yet is to have sustained success and go on a little bit of a run, at least to give themselves a little bit of a better standing compared to the rest of not only their conference, but their division especially.
And, you know, it's interesting, one of the complicating factors, and we're in conversation here with Kyle Bukauskas from 32 Thoughts Hockey Night in Canada. One of the complicating factors for those playoff hopeful teams in the East, I think, is the great start of the Washington Capitals, right? Because, you know, you kind of pencil in, okay, yeah, Florida is going to be there, Carolina is going to be there, but are there these other openings? But now all of a sudden, with the way they've played, like, they've kind of separated themselves from the pack early. And of course, a big part of that is Alex Ovechkin, 10 goals in 14 games, and now all of a sudden, what, 31 shy of the record? And you go back 12 months, right, when he's off to a really, really slow start, and I think some people started to think, you know, yeah, he's probably still going to get there, but could this take a lot longer than we thought? Could it be kind of anticlimactic, him kind of, you know, limping over the finish line, as it were, to get to the record? Now, I mean, like, is he going to do this by the end of the year? Like, it's in play, at least, with the hot start, that we could be talking about a new all-time goals leader in the NHL as soon as the end of this season.
Right. Like, what's now, he's 32 from breaking the record, as you say, 31 from tying, and they have, what, 68 games left? Like, that doesn't seem so difficult.
That's less than a 40-goal pace. You know,
exactly, right? And certainly for someone of his ilk. And when you think back to Nicholas Backstrom, when unfortunately just got to the point where the injuries were too much, you think of how many years those guys played together. And so when he goes down again and you're like, oh, my gosh, what's that going to mean for Ovechkin's production? But now you've got a guy like Dylan Strome. He has, what, 18 assists already this year. He's assisted on all 10 of Ovechkin's goals to this point. So what a nice combination that is proving to be. You can tell that there's a really good thing going between team and head coach there, Spencer Carberry. Like, they get into the playoffs kind of backdoor last year, but you know, clearly are a team much more confident with who they are and how they have to play to win. And between that, Connor McMichael also at 10 goals along with the great eight, like he's finally, you know, at a point where you're seeing kind of the promise that I'm sure Washington envisioned when they first selected him. Like, Jacob Chychrun has looked good there. You know, a guy like Rasmus Sandin, traded from Toronto a couple of years ago, continues to look better. Like, all these reasons. And then Logan Thompson in net, right? He's been perfect so far, 7 for 7. Like, there's a bunch of reasons beyond the brilliance of Ovi here that's translated to Washington's success here to begin the season. So, and one of the things I pointed out too, like, I don't know if you saw, they win in St. Louis 8-1 on Saturday.
Yep.
And they actually wore like their navy blue helmets, which they usually wear at home.
Yeah.
Right? You typically wear white on the road, but they had their home helmets. I don't know if that was by design or just a miscounting or a misplacement by the equipment staff, but maybe that becomes more of a thing for the Capitals going forward with how good they looked and how good the results were doing that too. So yeah, it's been a surprise. Not many saw this coming here, but I think it's is it a chicken or the egg thing? Are the Washington Capitals good because Ovi's scoring? Is Ovi scoring because the Capitals are successful? I think it's a bit of both right now, because there was, I think, concern going back a couple of years where you knew that this was becoming a legitimate chance that he could pursue Gretzky's 894. Goal total, and it was like the team was entering a transition phase, and well, how much of that are they willing to give up to support Ovechkin in his chase here, and what's the fallout and the trickle down damage to the organization in the long run? And right now they're showing they're finding ways to do both.
So we see the Calgary Flames come to town for the second time this year. Of course, they were here on the night one of the season, where the Canucks blew a 4-1 lead against the Flames. And, you know, that really kickstarted a nice start to the season for Calgary. It slowed down a bit, but you look at it and they're still, you know, they're holding down a wild card spot in the West. I know they've lost their last couple of games, but in overtime on both occasions, right? So they're still picking up points. I think at the very least, Calgary has proved they're better than maybe a lot of people anticipated. Can they hang around in the playoff race in the Western Conference, in your view?
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one, right? Especially the tough news today with Anthony Mantha being done for the year. Like, I thought he had a nice start to the season there, and a good opportunity for him on a 1-year kind of prove it deal. But now that is all out the window. So there's another person, you know, that now you've got to go without. I think the fact that after some, you know, it was interesting early on, you know, what were they doing with Matthew Coronado? There was the stuff on, you know, social media, his agent was kind of suggesting, and some of the things he was reposting of other people complaining about, why isn't Coronado up with the big club? Why isn't he playing? And you thought, oh man, where are things going here? But that seems to have all settled. He's looked really good the last few games, and a nice goal against Buffalo there to tie things on Saturday. And as you mentioned, they ultimately lost in overtime. But so I think, yeah, it's going to be tough for them to stay in the mix. But I think they've got a chance to, like, just because, you know, some of the other players beyond that, like Backlund's looked impressive. Like, I've always been a big Blake Coleman fan, going back to when Tampa scooped him up and the impact that he had on their two championships. And also a guy like Mackenzie Weegar, like Ellie and I were talking about it on the pod as well, that Don Granato and Doug Armstrong were at that Buffalo-Calgary game on Saturday afternoon, and you thought, well, they're probably watching Weegar. They're maybe even watching a guy like Nazem Kadri too. So he's a guy that I think is on the radar very much for a potential Team Canada spot, which speaks to, you know, the start that he's off to. I think this is a pretty good sign, at least for Craig Conroy, when, you know, you go into the year and, you didn't want to try to push the fast forward button. You wanted to give your young players an opportunity to play, and maybe that came at the expense of overall success. But they're able to at least stay competitive here. And if that continues, I mean, man, for some of the guys that have been there for a while, or maybe are locked up long term, that are kind of perhaps, you think, been wondering about, all right, how long is this going to be before we're competitive again? Maybe it's not so far off in the future for Calgary.
All right, Kyle. So just before I let you go here, I'm going to share a tip with you, and you can share this with your Eastern media colleagues. I know you're a BC guy. You're based in Ontario now. You guys come on to Vancouver radio for the rest of the year, you're going to get this question a lot, and it's going to be about Quinn Hughes and whether he's a Hart Trophy candidate or should be a a Hart Trophy candidate. The groundswell is growing here, Kyle, and we're going to try to will this into existence. And I'm speaking tongue in cheek, but I do think you look at what he's done for this team and just how much different they are when he's on the ice versus when he's off the ice. And look, I know the result on Saturday against McDavid and Dreisaitl, you know, not necessarily helping his case, but do you think there could, not that he didn't have to win, but maybe a finalist in the conversation, top five, something like that? I know it's so hard for defensemen to get traction for that award. They have the Norris, all of that. But I kind of do think Quinn Hughes is making it a conversation, or will make it a conversation, if he keeps playing like this for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I totally see it. I really do, Jamie. And I'm not just saying that, understanding, you know, which market we're on here. I promise you, I've been a big fan of his. Getting a chance to chat with him on a little more formal basis in Vegas before the season started, like, was really struck by just how insightful and thoughtful he was. Of course, loved watching, you know, the part of the Amazon series that was focused on him, and just learning a little bit more about the guy. But when you look at how he plays, like, yeah, I understand that typically this is not an award that leans towards defensemen, but I just, with the way that the game is changing, and how he plays, how a guy like Cale Makar plays, it's hard to ignore. Mm. And now that he's already got Norris Trophy in his cabinet, like, I it kind of feels like you kind of need the first one to be in the mix for the other one. And he's done that. And if he continues to elevate and to, as you say, impact the game the way that he does when he's on the ice, I think there's just going to be too much there to not pass up. And yeah, does he win one ultimately? Gosh, great question.
That's hard.
I don't have the
That's
answer.
It's pretty
there.
Hard to win
but
one. Yeah.
So totally. But to be a finalist, to be in the legitimate, you know, conversation for that come season's end, I totally buy the idea of him being there, because he's just how he plays. Like, he just, you know, when he's on the ice, and he's a player that you can't miss. And, you know, he's, as you say, like, he does so many things for Vancouver that, you know, when you go back to the definition of the award, he checks a lot of boxes.
Kyle, really appreciate the time. Thanks so much for doing this again, taking time out on a holiday Monday. We appreciate it. And hopefully we can chat again soon.
Yes, looking forward to it, Jamie. Thanks for having me.
Of course, that is Kyle Bogoskis from 32 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada, weighing in on Quinn Hughes, potential Hart candidate, and giving the vote in favor of that is Kyle. This is what we have to do. We have to bring on the dreaded Eastern media one by one and hold their feet to the fire, get them on the record supporting Quinn Hughes as a Hart Trophy candidate. And Kyle was good enough to oblige there with us today. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And just a couple of minutes here before we take a break, as I mentioned, Landon Ferraro is going to join me to co-host the final hour of the show up next. But I did want to pass this along. The Canucks, of course, have wrapped up their practice at Rogers Arena today. Dakota Joshua was taking was a full participant, taking line rushes on a fourth line with Atu Ratu and Nils Höglander. Tockett had this update on Dakota Joshua after practice. This is per Randeep Janda here. Says Rick Tockett on a Dakota Joshua return. He looked good today. Thursday could be a target date, but we'll see how he feels. So obviously that's rules out, or would seem to rule out, Dakota Joshua for tomorrow's game against Calgary, which means when you factor that in and Brock Besser, the Canucks only have 11 healthy forwards on the roster at the moment. Rick Tockett yesterday, after the team went 11 forwards, 7 defensemen against Edmonton, kind of said, yeah, I don't want to do that again. That's not my thing. I'm not interested in that. So that would lead me to believe that ahead of tomorrow's game, one of Arshdeep Bains or Nils Åman is going to be called up from Abbotsford. We'll see, but if Joshua's not ready to go, if Besser's still on the shelf and you don't want to go 11-7, that's kind of your only other option at this point. So that's the update on Dakota Joshua. Hopefully he is able to get in on Thursday. That would be great for him to get back. Great for the Canucks to have him back as well. All right, we'll take a break. As mentioned, Landon Ferraro joins me next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I am Jamie Dodd. I'm live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet. What are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Send your thoughts, comments, questions in. And as mentioned, always a treat to have my next guest here co-hosting for the final hour. He is a former NHL player, a regular Sportsnet Canucks analyst on TV and the radio as well. Of course, he is Landon Ferraro. Landon, what's going on, man? How are you doing?
Not too much. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. It was a very, very eventful weekend for the Canucks. In bad ways, in some ways, right? The loss on Saturday, some interesting stuff happening with Lekkomäki getting called up. So a lot to get into here around the Canucks. And, you know, let's start with the results on Saturday. And I'm kind of torn, right? Because you never want to see a game get out of hand and kind of fall apart like that, like it did for the Canucks against the Oilers. You end up losing 7-3 against the division rival, playoff rematch, and all of that. On the other hand, you know, Tocchet kind of said after the game there's some fatigue things, especially for Kevin Lankinen. For whatever reason, I also kind of find myself just thinking, you know what, just toss that one out and move on. Don't linger on it too much. I mean, what was your reaction to the result on Saturday?
I would say about the same, right? Like, they just come back off a road trip. Mm-hmm. And you can talk all you want about strength of schedule while they're down there, who they're playing, but at the end of the day, they still had to play games on the road. They had to fly back into town, get into the next game, and you know, you mentally try and psych yourself up. Like, you're feeling heavy legs and all of this, and you're trying to get yourself going. But sometimes it just doesn't happen. And then, you know, you have to also, you know, put into the equation of Edmonton has not been playing good for, well, the season so far. And their offense finally pops. Like, it had to happen eventually. It was almost just like a perfect storm of, you know, and that's not making excuses. You'd like to see that game, you know, end up 5-2.
Yes.
You know, like, at least keep it better and closer. But at the same time, you know, it really doesn't matter if you lose 12-0 or 7-3. Like, you lose. You don't get any points for showing up.
Yeah, and I think for me, maybe the most frustrating part about it is that, okay, they lost to New Jersey 6-0, right? And that was an ugly one. You go on the road, you win three games, then you come home and you lose 7-3. So you're what? You're 13-3 down over your last two home games. And, you know, it's so early in the season. I think a lot of this is just randomness, right? And kind of bad luck, but the home record is not great. How much are players aware of that? How much do they notice? Like, hey, we should be a lot better than this at home, right? Like, that's two pretty ugly results. Your record isn't great in general, going back to, you know, game one losing against Calgary. Is that a thing that players are aware of even this early in the season?
They're aware of it for sure. Like, you're sitting there 1-2-3 at home with opportunities to have a couple wins out of that as well, right? So, like, you're aware of it. I always found it, you know, a bit annoying to listen to, because you're like, we're going out there, we're trying
to win. Annoying to listen to the media? No way. What are you talking about?
That's why I went to Europe. I couldn't understand them anymore. But no, like, you start looking at the record as it drags on, and you're like, okay, like, it's no different, and yet it is very different. We need to try and find a way to make it, you know, a road game at home. And, you know, coaches in the past, you know, more in playoffs have, you know, gone to the extent of, you know, players are staying in hotels the night before. Like, that's nowhere where any player wants to get to. Like, you're on the road so much through the season anyway. You get back home and, like, you know, it's hard to say distractions because it's your family and things like that. But, like, it takes a lot of focus and, you know, often a lot of times a lot of selfishness to be very good at the highest level of the game. And so you get back home, you're excited to see your family and do everything, but at the same time, like, you have to make sure you're ready for the next game. And right now, it's just not clicking. But you know there's, again, more excuses, but at the same time, like, you know, you're losing Brock Besser out of the lineup after coming off of the road trip. Like, there's a lot of moving pieces that just didn't line up to the Canucks being able to play their best game. Like, there's a lot of noise around the team going into it.
Yeah, and it does again, because it's such a small sample, right? You said 1, 2, and 3. So we're talking 6 games here, right? So it could be, it could look completely different for the rest of the season. We could forget we were ever having this conversation. I do look at this next stretch of games, right? Because that was game one of a 6-game homestand. And now you've got Calgary tomorrow, the Islanders on Thursday, the Blackhawks Saturday, and then Nashville back to back on Sunday. And, you know, for varying reasons, like Calgary, that's a division rival. They already beat you in your home opener. The Islanders, that's Horvat coming back again, right? That's still going to have some juice. Connor Bedard and the Blackhawks on Saturday. It's kind of a combination of teams you really want to beat and also teams that aren't necessarily elite. And it feels like this is a pretty important stretch to maybe end that conversation about the home record, right? Like, they have the opportunity here to go out and, okay, it's been a while since we've given our fans a really nice performance. Let's go out and do that here. Let's take care of business. Let's kind of put to bed this home record talking point this week.
Yeah, like, there's teams here that you have to get wins against.
Yep.
And, you know, with Calgary, it doesn't matter that they started off hot. They've been, you know, sliding off a little bit. Anthony Mantha with, you know, an ACL now out for the season.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's still a team you blew a lead to in your home opener. Like, you want to have that revenge. You want to make sure you come out and play well, regardless of the Edmonton result. But moving forward, like, you know, you get to the Islanders, they don't score. And then they lose Barzal. Who else? Duclair's out of the line.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, they've lost their couple pieces that do really produce. Like, that's a team where the Canucks can skate, can get in on the forecheck, and really try and keep them in their own end to where you're just forcing them to defend the entire game. Like, that's something that you can really kind of build your systems out on, I think, in that game. And then, you know, you get into Chicago and Nashville, like, as much as they're very different with the personnel they have,
mm-hmm.
it's still kind of the same. Like, they have parts, you know, obviously more in Nashville with, you know, the personnel that they have. Like, those teams can pop off and score if you give them the opportunities. Like, even Chicago, if you aren't mentally ready to play that game and you take a couple penalties early, like, they still have a power play, they can score a bit, right? So, like, you can find yourself into some trouble, but at the same time, you look at it and, like, this is a 4-game stretch here where, you know, like, there's really no reason that they can't go 3-1 out
yep.
of it. And if they do that, all of a sudden, you know, that puts them at 4-4-3.
Yeah, or something like that. Yeah.
That's quick math off the top of the head there. But no, like, it's, you know, all of a sudden it becomes respectable. But
yep.
that's a very reasonable expectation for your team to be putting on themselves.
Yeah. And again, it just feels like a real opportunity for the team kind of sitting here. And again, you know, they had the 2 days off after that one on Saturday, got back to practice, all of that. Now, there's some things still working against them. Besser's injury. And by the way, and we can talk more about this at some point, but Tocchet describing Brock Besser as day to day, which is really good news, right? We've had very little information about this. We all saw the hit, but you're thinking, you know, could this be weeks? What are we talking about here? So the day-to-day designation from Tocchet, very good news. Now, one of the storylines from that game against Edmonton, I think, was the tough night for JT Miller. And, you know, it's been, he's having a very interesting season because he's producing. And he's producing in key moments a lot, right? That have, like, directly helped the team earn points, whether it's an overtime goal or, you know, even getting the game to overtime against Calgary on night one. But it's also, you know, you look at his 5-on-5 numbers, things like that, it hasn't been as impressive as it certainly was last year or has been in past seasons for JT Miller. And then that game against Saturday or against the Oilers on Saturday, obviously a really tough assignment going up against their top end players. But I also wonder if we kind of saw, we always think of it as, hey, it's the JT Miller line, and he's obviously a great player. I wonder if we started to see just how important Brock Besser is to that as well, right? Like, he's become such an accomplished defensive player. He has so much chemistry with JT Miller, and as much as, yeah, when they're at the top of their game, it's Miller doing a lot of the driving. I mean, that's a tough, tough player to lose on your side and still go out and be as effective as you are with him.
Yeah, I think it's very tough. You know, they've been together for a couple of years
yep.
now. Like, they've built, you know, a bond and chemistry that is, you know, anyone, whether you know hockey or not, you can see that they work well together.
Yep.
And, you know, JT Miller is a very, very good player in this league, but, you know, he's not that superstar that can take over his game with his speed and like all this, you know, what we saw with Connor McDavid. And, you know, and that's no knock to him. There's only a couple of those type of players in the league, really. And so, you know, he's been asked to play big minutes and kind of hold the forwards together as, you know, through the early parts of the year where other players hadn't been performing yet. You know, Pettersson had, you know, a pretty good game the other night. Yep. It was, you know, that was really nice to see. That was something where at least you could pull a little bit of a happiness point out of that game. But, you know, like that's a lot of big minutes on a guy that, you know, he's not a Connor Garland that is a water bug. Like JT's carrying a lot of weight through, and I'm not saying he's overweight as I say that one, but
he's a big fella.
He's a big man. Like that is, it's a lot of work to get that, you know, get the body moving around, especially with the matchups that he gets and trying to take over parts of games where, you know, he could see nothing else was happening and it was kind of falling on him to do it. You know, you're going to see a bit of a slide once in a while if you're asking a guy to do that consistently. Like, it's just too hard.
What did you see from JT Miller on Saturday? Like, because, you know, we go back to the preseason. He only played the one game. It seems like he's dealing with something physical, and that is probably a big contribute here. But what kind of stands out to you watching him right now?
I just think, like, he just looked tired, and I'd say more mentally tired. Like, you know, does he turn over a puck once in a while? Yes. Any player that's, you know, is meant to make plays, he's going to turn pucks over once in a while. It's just a byproduct of it. But, you know, he was throwing the puck away a little quicker than he normally does. You know, it just didn't look like he knew where the next play was, or, you know, if he saw, you know, a defender in a vulnerable position, you know, with him, with JT with the puck, like normally he's able to use his size to push around that player. Like he just bullies guys, really. And that just wasn't there on Saturday night. And I don't think it's really that fair to expect that every single night. Like he's going to have some nights that just don't go.
Yeah, and again, I mean, that's one of the reasons you want to have multiple stars on your lineup, right? Is because they're not going to be on their game 100% of the time. You need guys that can pick up the slack on some of those off nights. You know, the point about the giveaways with Miller, I always think it's so fascinating with him because part of what makes him a great player when he's on is he's bold, right? And he's willing to take chances and he can make passes that a lot of guys wouldn't attempt or wouldn't be able to complete. But it just seems like it's such a fine line where if it slips a little bit, all of a sudden it goes from, you know, wow, I can't believe he's making these plays out there to like, oh my goodness, why is he making these plays out there? And maybe it's just a little bit of mental fatigue, whatever it is, but it feels like he's always kind of on the edge, and the distance between the really good JT and the sometimes the really frustrating JT is not that great sometimes.
Well, and I think like the frustrating JT is a good point because I think part of it is him getting frustrated knowing that he's not at his best. And, you know, when a player that is meant to make plays and be a play driver does, like, his legs aren't there. He's not fully, you know, at 100%. You start trying to force things because, you know, I know I can make the play. I've made it 1,000 times before. Yet when he goes to take that step to get to the lane, instead of clearing 2.5 feet, he clears 2. And now he's not as far away. That stick can still get in the lane. Like, it's just little things like that where, like, it starts to add up and you get frustrated. Now you're trying to force plays into happening where, you know, that's just, you can't play hockey that way. You need to be able to just make the plays that are available to you. And that's what he does so well when his game is rolling.
As you mentioned, one of the bright spots, and it's kind of weird to talk about bright spots from a 7-3 loss to a divisional opponent and all that. But one of the bright spots was a solid performance from Elias Pettersson. He tips in the goal. Even before that, looked more engaged, I think, more assertive, you know, more creative, certainly more confident in his game than we've seen him in a while. Is that, you know, I guess, how close, like, is that a baby step? Was it more of a baby step? How would you kind of characterize what we saw from Elias Pettersson on Saturday?
I would say it was a baby step if the puck was just coming to him and he started to make some plays. But I think it's a big step simply on the fact of, like, he was determined to get a loose puck when he was there. Like, the amount of times where there'd be a bobbled puck, it, you know, kind of pops up in the air. And before, he's just kind of reaching for it, like, because if I can quick pick this, now I can make my next play quick. now, like, he's throwing his body into it. Like, he's, you know, protecting the puck. He's trying. You could see him trying to use all of his abilities and not just kind of hoping that they work. So that's why, like, I think it was a very, you know, a very big step for him, and something where he can look back and, you know, literally see the difference with results as well, which is a big part. Because if he does all those things and still ends up with zeros, like, you're sitting there thinking, okay, like, I'm doing what they want now and it's still not there.
Yeah.
Like, that's super frustrating, but he started to do the things that, you know, he's done in the past that brought him success, and it came back again. Like, you know, because the game got out of hand, like, I kind of forgot until I was rewatching a bit again of, you know, like, they start to come back. Like, he hits another post before that timeout. Like, that goes in. That game's completely different already. But again, like, that's him getting a puck high on the right side in his in the offensive zone, and not just looking to see what the next play is. Like, he starts moving his feet immediately. He sees a lane and says, you know what, I can shoot it too, and takes a shot, and he misses by, what, a quarter of an inch?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think it was a good step for him.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I was saying on Friday, it almost felt to me watching like he had forgotten how good he could be. You know what I mean? Like, he had changed his game and gone away from what made him special. And I think on Saturday we started to see a little bit of that he was like, oh yeah, I can be one of the best players on the ice, or the best player on the ice. Maybe not when McDavid or Dreisaitl is out there, but in a lot of games he has that type of ability. And I think it's a really good point you made about, not only was he doing those things, but he got rewarded for it. And yeah, the team lost, but it's like, that must go so far for his confidence to, like, okay, I'm having this type of game, I'm doing these things, and oh yeah, it's leading directly to goals for my team too.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest part of it, because, you know, I definitely was nowhere near the level of what Pettersson's skill is, but, you know, I was a streaky scorer, mm-hmm. and when things weren't going my way, you start trying to find other ways to help the team, which is good. But before you know it, you've gone 10 games and you're like, I'm not even shooting the puck anymore. Like, I'm turning myself into a grinder, just trying to be helpful.
Yep.
But, you know, that'll help in the short term, or, you know, if you have a game where you feel like you're off a little bit, okay, like, I can morph a little bit and try and get through this one and help. But, you know, it's not going to help the Vancouver Canucks at all if he turns himself into a grinder and just doesn't try to score anymore. So the fact that he looked like he had that confidence, and more importantly, the determination to make plays and put himself in, you know, in the way, I think that's the bigger part.
Yeah, it's that. It's just that. Like, just go out and be yourself. Go out and do your thing, you know? Go out and be Elias Pettersson, what originally made you such an elite player, what earned you that contract, right? Like, it's great to take care of the defensive side of things. That's been a big part of his game through his career as well. But you can't do all that other stuff to the exclusion of making plays, of trying to take on guys, of being aggressive. And it felt like just he had moved the needle a little, or moved the dial a little much to the safer side of things, the grinder side of things. Good to see him getting back to it a little bit. And, you know, I like for the whole team here, right? I mean, as I said earlier in the show, there have been moments already at home where the fans in Rogers Arena have kind of let their frustration be known at Elias Pettersson, right? Whether it's kind of Bronx cheers or boos or whatever it is, frustration. And I think for him to have that performance at home, really important. And now, much like the team we are talking about, right, the opportunity in front of them, I think this is a big stretch for Petey as well, with not necessarily the, you know, elite defensive teams coming through. Like, he has a chance to really build on that. And, you know, I think there's even a chance that we look back on that game on Saturday and say, okay, yeah, they lost 7-3, but that was a positive turning point for the season if it's the moment where Elias Pettersson starts to turn things around.
I agree for sure. And I mean, it sounds weird what I'm about to say, because it is, you know, it's a business and you need to win and it's a results business, but, like, you got to have fun.
Yes.
Like, you can turn, you're playing hockey for a living. Like, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, you're chasing a piece of rubber around a sheet of ice. Like, life could be a lot worse,
uh-huh.
right? And you quickly forget that sometimes while you're, you know, you're in trying to get yourself out of a hole, or the team's not playing good, whatever the situation is. And it's almost good to sit back sometimes, just remind yourself that, and remind yourself, like, you know, I can be, and not can be, I know I'm one of the better players in this league. And that brings me joy when I'm making these plays or I'm scoring goals, whatever his favorite part mm-hmm. is. Like, you got to find that happiness and fun again, because then your game will flow. Like, if you're angry and trying to force your play every single game, one, it just doesn't work that well. But two, it's just mentally exhausting. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't go a whole year like that.
And I think we've all seen, you know, it's such a good point to bring up, because we've all seen, you know, you can go back to his press conference in the playoffs last year, right? It's like that. There was no fun. There was no joy, no fun whatsoever present. We've seen it already, you know, through his frustration this year as well. And I think especially, again, the home thing, that should be the most fun. Right. You know, hey, you're going out and you're doing cool things in front of your home fans and they're cheering for you and you're winning and you're scoring. Like, that should be the peak of the fun experience in a lot of ways. Right. And instead, I almost wonder, because I actually think before that game, his best games had all been on the road and some of his toughest games had been at home. And I almost started to wonder, like, is the knowing that the fans are keying in on him, right? They're watching, they're desperate to see it. Was that almost working against him, right? Because it's like, oh, I got to go out or they're going to be mad at me. And just breaking that cycle, right? And saying, no, as you said, this is fun. We're going to have fun together, guys. I'm going to have fun. You're going to have fun watching me. Everyone's going to have fun. It sounds cheesy. It sounds corny, but like, that's a huge part of this, I think, for Pettersson.
I mean, like, I couldn't imagine trying to do my job knowing that if I don't have a very good game, not just an okay mm-hmm. game, it's not going to be acceptable.
Yeah.
Like, that's a lot of pressure. And yeah, we can say that he's getting paid to handle it. And you know, it is true. Like, you have the big contract, you have to be able to produce. But in saying that, it doesn't take the human element mm-hmm. out of it. Like, no one wants to be getting booed on the road and at home.
No.
Like, there's got to be some relief in there somewhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, rightfully so to a certain extent. You know, the fans were not happy. And again, like, that's fair. And he needs to pull himself out of that. But as bad as it goes one way, if it's starting to go the other way, how about we make sure that he hears it that way mm-hmm. as well? Like, let him know that there is support there. Like, you just need to play the way everyone knows that you can.
I totally agree. And the other thing I thought was interesting about Pettersson on Saturday was that it happened without Connor Garland on his line. And Garland's been so good this, but I almost wonder if there was an element of, with him and Pettersson together, Pettersson almost kind of, okay, hey, you're great with the puck. You have the motor. You go get it. You're making plays. I'm going to let you do that. And I'm going to kind of step back, try to find the soft areas of the ice. And then without Garland, it seemed like he almost realized, oh, hey, I've got to do more of that, right? I've got to be on the puck. I've got to be the one kind of setting plays up more a little bit here.
And because they just played Edmonton, I'll use them as an example. Like, early in the year, they brought in, you know, they brought in Skinner and Arvidsson. Mm-hmm. It's perfect. They can split McDavid and Dreisaitl. Everyone's got a lot of line mates. But for the early parts of the first, you know, 4 or 5 games, like, Skinner and Arvidsson were with Dreisaitl, and all three of them wanted the puck all the time.
Yep.
Like, they're all playmakers. If we look at that line, like, you want the puck in Dreisaitl's hands.
Yeah.
Like, there's almost too much on one, you know, too much of the same thing on one line. And to your point, like, I feel that with Garland, because he's had such a hot start and he is the player that he is, like, it is easy to defer to him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, he can go get it. Even if we're matched up, like, we're going on a forecheck, we're side by side, yeah, I'll let him go. He's going to get that
yep.
battle anyway. Well, no, get yourself in there and make him be the support guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it can go both ways, but you have to be able to, you know, use your authority a little bit
mm-hmm.
and, you know, take the guesswork out of it and just kind of put yourself into spots. And that's what I feel like Pettersson started to do. Like, everywhere he went on the ice, like, he wasn't giving himself an out anymore. Like, he was putting himself 100% into the battle. And I think that's a big difference.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because on the one hand, you know, sometimes people text in, it's like, oh, he's, you know, not afraid to engage physically. And it's like, I don't think that's true. Like, he's in there throwing hits and stuff. But then there's those other moments, as you point out, where it's reaching with the stick. It's trying to poke the puck free or something, right? Instead of going in. And it's just like, I don't think it was ever a willingness thing for him. It was just a reading the play, it almost seemed like, thing for him.
I will say with Pettersson, at least in my opinion, when, you know, yes, he was still being physical, but it was a lot of that, like, even on the forecheck, like, the spin around.
Yes, hit the reverse
backside.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, you're hitting someone, but you're not really going for the puck either.
Yes.
Like, that is a very guarded play. And, yes, he was still reverse hitting people last game because he is very good at it. But also when he had the opportunity where he's skating forward, like, he'd go into it forward.
Mm-hmm.
He'd go in, stick on puck. Now he's giving himself a chance not to just finish the body, but keep the play or keep the puck there, or even better yet, cause a turnover. Like, now there's parts to that play that you can build off of, not just, you know, a pass gets made out, he finishes his hit, and, well, they're already going on the offensive rush.
All right. Landon Ferraro in studio here, co-hosting. Drance is off. He'll be back tomorrow on Canucks Talk. We'll take a break. Lots more to get into, though. I mean, we haven't even touched on Lekkomäki coming up. Looks set to play his first game tomorrow against Calgary. I want to talk a little bit about a player getting their first NHL game. What's that like? I know you were covering Abbotsford this weekend as well, so we can chat a little bit about some of the interesting players down with the Abbotsford Canucks. Keep sending your texts in to 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Final segment of the show up next here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Landon Ferraro here in studio co-hosting the final hour of the show. Drance are back on tomorrow for Canucks Talk on a Canucks game day tomorrow. They'll take on the Calgary Flames. We're live here from the Kintec studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome details at DunbarLumber.com. We will hear from Rick Tocchet at some point in this segment. He spoke for about 5 or 6 minutes after practice, so we'll play that. But Landon, you know, looking ahead to the game tomorrow against Calgary, there's been a lot of moving parts to the Canucks roster. You know, they trade Daniel Sprong. Besser's status is up in the air. Joshua doesn't look like he's good to go for tomorrow. They're sending guys down to Abbotsford. The upshot is they call up top prospect Jonathan Lekkomäki, and seems very likely at this point, I don't think it's been confirmed, but very, very likely that he'll make his NHL debut tomorrow against the Calgary Flames. Exciting for a lot of reasons. What do you remember from your first NHL game?
I remember a couple things very clearly. Like, I remember going out for warm-up and just, like, I don't remember anything from warm-up,
yes,
but I remember walking out there and, like, this is the coolest thing ever. And then I remember being on the PK, taking another penalty with the puck over glass, thinking,
oh,
I'll,
no,
I'll never get back here.
That's
again.
It.
But then, you know, the coolest part was we ended up winning. We beat the Leafs. I think it was 3-2. And, you know, everyone goes out, sees Jimmy Howard. And as you're going off the ice, I just remember my dad telling me, like, really take it all in.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of stopping there and looking around and, like, actually realizing where you are and what you just accomplished. It was a really cool feeling for sure.
It's special, right? For everyone who gets the chance to do it, obviously in the first time, and, you know, you see the tradition around it and the rookie lap and all that. And, you know, for a player in Lekkomäki's situation, from the fans' perspective, it's obviously really exciting, as well. There's been a lot of hype about this guy, you know, still a fairly recent draft pick. Tough year for him for a variety of reasons out of his control after they drafted him, but then has really bounced back. And the thing I'm going to be fascinated with Lekkomäki, you know, he was skating the last couple of practices next to JT Miller at the top of the lineup. So he's a guy who was drafted based on his ability to score goals, you know, scored a ton of goals in Sweden last year, already in Abbotsford, scoring, shooting at a really impressive rate. It's got to be very tricky for a player to come up to the NHL and kind of balance, okay, I'm an offensive guy, I'm here to score goals, but also knowing that you have to play that complete game for Rick Tocchet to stick in the lineup. Like, how difficult is that for young players to stick to their identity and the thing that's made them successful while also making sure they're checking all the other boxes that the coaches need to see at the NHL level?
I mean, it's extremely hard. It obviously depends on the player and how, you know, just what their mentality is and, you know, where they are in their, you know, growth as a player and a person. What I would say is, you know, I did the game in Abbotsford when he scored his first down there of the season, and it ended up being like a tap in on the back door, like a kind of rebound squeaked out. But I want to say that was his sixth or seventh shot of the night.
Yep.
Like, he was all over it, and he had all those flashes. But at the same time, in this D zone, he picked off two passes that were going through the seam. Like, he was in the right spot. You know, through the neutral zone, he knew where he was supposed to be standing. He picked out another couple out of midair that ended up being, one was a very good rush chance for, and the other one was just, you know, well, chuck in and go change. But again, like, he's in the right positions. You can tell that he knows that this is a place where system and defensive play is not an option.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but at the same time, like, he has the skill to do it. He has the mentality of a shooter. Like, those two alone are already ahead of a lot of other, you know, young players making their first appearance in an NHL game. Like, a lot of time you're looking for the pass because you're scared to shoot it. Like, he's not going to be scared.
He's not
going
to be scared to shoot it.
And once JT gives him a pass or two and he sees the release, he's going to be giving him the puck a bit more as well. Like, he's going to quickly gain some trust, especially in the offensive side. But, you know, with any young player, he's going to have his peaks and valleys. Mm-hmm. It's just about, you know, can between his teammates and the coaching staff and himself, can they make those peaks and valleys become a lot closer together instead of so high or so low?
Yeah. And, you know, as you mentioned his teammates there, I mean, look, he, last couple of days of practice, he's skating on the wing with JT Miller, Pius Suter up on that line as well. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's the first line really for this team. It's a big spot for him to go into. Now, I do think it's the kind of thing where, okay, he's skating on the first line, but if it's, you know, a one goal game in the third period, are you going to see a ton of minutes for him? Not necessarily, right? There's still things they can do to kind of manage his minutes, but I find it, one, a big vote of confidence for them to put him in that spot right away, but also for JT Miller and Pius Suter, right? The flip side of it, how do they need to approach, okay, we've got this guy who's got a ton of offensive skill, but he's also new to the NHL. He's playing with us. What do they do differently, or how do they just, like, how do they have to approach that situation?
I mean, they just have to be on their game completely, because you don't know what you're going to get. It doesn't matter whether it's, you know, the number one prospect that everyone's been watching for 10 years, you know, developing and all this crazy stuff, or someone that's just coming in, like, you need to make sure that you make the game as easy as possible for them. You know, they'll talk to him beforehand, and, you know, there'll be definite, you know, let's make sure we're talking. I'll always be there to support you. If you're on the wall, like, I'm always going to be underneath. You know, like, you'll always have a safety valve. If you see something that you don't like, like, don't be afraid to tell us, right? Like, there's a reason you're here too. So, you know, yeah, we might have, you know, proven track record in this league, but if you can help us be better, I'll happily do that as well, right? Like, you have to make him feel as comfortable as possible, you know, as soon as he gets there, because, as you know, the quicker he settles in, his skill will come out, and that's only going to help JT and Suter as they're playing with him.
It'll be interesting as well. I don't know if they practiced on the power play today, but, you know, with Besser out, at least day-to-day, Sprong obviously no longer with the team, there is an opening. Now, you still have guys like Suter, DeBrusk, Garland there who can slot in on the power play. I don't know if they'll go to it in game one, but based on what you saw watching him in Abbotsford, I mean, could that be a way to, you know, maybe you're not playing him a ton of 5-on-5 minutes, but you're getting him his opportunities on the power play? Is that somewhere where you think he could contribute, you know, maybe not game one, but sooner rather than later at the NHL level?
For sure. Like, that's how you get him his extra minutes.
Yeah.
Like, if there's a ton of defensive zone faceoffs, 5-on-5, and, you know, his first board battle didn't go as well as they were hoping, they can start kind of, you know, putting someone out there for the faceoff. Then he can jump on. Like, they can shelter him that way. But yeah, the power play is the way for him to really grab ice time. You know, Bachelor actually put it out a bit ago. They have him on the second unit as of right now. You know, so he'd be playing like in Miller's spot on the second yep. unit. I think that's a good place for him to start as well. And there's no saying that if he has a really good start to the game that and the first power play mm-hmm. happens and it doesn't go smoothly for the top unit, that he doesn't very quickly get put, you know, I could see him being in the bumper. Like, I know how good his shot is from the outside and he has that big one-timer, but, you know, his snapper is such a quick release and he's, you know, he's crafty with his stick. Like, that's a very good bumper player as well. Like, he's going to be a flanker of, like, when he gets here full time and all that, because he has too good of a shot.
Yes.
You don't want him just, you know, little quick one touches here and there. But, you know, like, that would be a play or a place where he could jump in if he does have a good start.
Yeah. And certainly, I mean, the power play, maybe a little better over the last few games, but certainly an area of concern still for the Canucks at this point. Before we go to the Rick Tocchet audio, as I mentioned, you were covering the Abbotsford game last night, and I know you've been covering them a little bit throughout the course of the season. So, I mean, yesterday they beat Bakersfield 4-2. Archer Shelovs goes down and picks up the win, and man, that just he made, 23 saves on 25 shots. That must just feel amazing for him to go in and have a normal game. I don't know if he was spectacular or not, but just, hey, I'm stopping pucks and we got the win. That must be huge for his confidence right now.
He didn't have to be spectacular yesterday. You know, they were playing Bakersfield there at the end of four games and six nights. Abby, I believe, were 3-4.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't the fastest game I've ever seen played at the American League level, but it was a very good game. But he stood tall when he needed to. The two goals that he gave up were, the first one was on the power play, and it was a full cross seam one-timer. Like, he didn't really have a chance on it. The second one, he was a little slow going right to left, but again, it was a one-timer that beat him high on the short side. Like, yeah, he might have been able to get there a little quicker, but
yep.
it's still a one-timer from Kajula, who just got back from playing with Edmonton as well, that you know, just beat him on the short side. But, you know, he fought to see pucks from range. I thought he looked a little more comfortable doing that, and I know that's been, you know, a pretty big talking point with him. But,
oh, yeah.
you know, he made the saves when he had to, and that's all they're asking for any of their goalies, is just make the saves when you have to. And he did that last night.
I think just so huge for him to get a game and again, start to rebuild that confidence after the rocky start to the season at the NHL level. Who else caught your eye in Abbotsford?
Well, I mean, for his goal, Klimovich, like, that shot would beat any NHL goalie from, like, he took it from just about the right side faceoff dot, mm-hmm. and, like, Delia had no chance at it. Like, it was a legit snapshot. But I honestly, like, I was most impressed with their D. Pettersson was, you know, he had a very good camp, and
yes.
I knew, obviously, stuck around longer than anyone really expected mm-hmm. him to, but he had that same physical mentality last night. But what I was, you know, really blown away with was his skating ability. A few times there was, you know, shot from the point in the defensive zone, bouncing puck. Instead of, you know, grabbing it and just throwing it off the boards, he takes it himself and skates. Like, he's pulling away from back checkers with how powerful his stride was. There, you know, Akita Hirose gets his first, you know, he had an eventful weekend. He finally gets back into the lineup for the first game against Bakersfield. You know, had a massive hit, ended up having to get in a fight.
Oh, wow.
So he had a little shiner going, but he ends up scoring last game or yesterday, adds another assist. You know, Christian Felton gets into just his second game, and he didn't look shy. Like, we were just talking about Lekker or Mackey, you know, jumping in. Like, this is Felton doing it in the American
yep.
League, and he didn't look shy with the puck. He made plays. He was aggressive at the lines. Like, their D were very good last night. And then I got to point out, too, Jet Wu had the empty netter.
Yep.
He scored it from just over, or like, right around the tops of the circle is his end. He put that thing in the top corner of the glove side. It was unbelievable. I don't know why
that's
I
amazing.
Got so excited about
no,
it, but I'm
incredible.
Like, God, that's amazing.
I thought you were going to say, like, just he hit it right down the middle, but going top corner, that's incredible.
He picked a corner. Like, I said on the broadcast, I don't know if Delia would have saved it anyway. Like, it was a bomb.
That's fantastic. And yeah, the hype for the defenseman, Elias Pettersson, like, it's just such a rare package. You know, 6'3", whatever, like 210, can being able to move, and then the mentality thing, right? And then the fact that he likes playing that mean physical game, like, whew, that is a very, very enticing package.
Like, he was involved physically with everyone on the ice. Yeah. Every time there was a whistle, you could just see him, and you can see the little smile creep on his face too. Like, he enjoys it, and that's what you want to see from those D that are physical. Like, you don't want to see the guy that you can tell that he's forcing himself to be that. Like, that's hard to do. Like, he's enjoying it. And the way he played last night, like, not to overhype him or anything like that. Like, I know he needs time to develop still, but like, if he played that game as the 6 or 7 defenseman, if he had to up here, he wouldn't stand out at all.
Yeah.
Like, he looked very good.
All right. That's the update, the latest from Abbotsford, courtesy of Landon, who was doing color on that game yesterday. Let's hear from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet again. They practice at Rogers Arena, and just lots going on with health updates for Besser, Joshua, Lucker Mackey looking like he can make his NHL debut. Here is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet.
Yeah, no, it was good. You know, you had a good effort, I heard, down there. Yeah, you know, you got to play, so I think it was a good, that's having your minor league team, what is it, an hour away, 3 hours away with traffic? So, but no, it's something that it really helps you, you know, when you have that, you're that close. So then I heard Artie played really well.
Do you feel like the system now between Vancouver and Abbotsford is sort of humming at top speed? Like, last year there were cap constraints and guys couldn't move, but the amount of movement here, is that sort of the way it's designed?
Yeah, I mean, that's really what it, you're right. That's a good point, because, you know, even to bring a guy up for a couple of games or even a couple of practices is huge for his development. And you can call a guy up at 10 o'clock and he'll be here for, you know, noon practice. That's something that I think that's what they tried to build the last couple of years, and it's really helped.
Is he in?
Who's that?
Artie, any more?
Artie the goalie?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yesterday, Dax after skating again on the fourth line.
Yeah.
Yesterday, he said he wants to make sure he's 100%. Not quite sure he's quite there yet. How are you handling that situation?
Yeah, no, I think he looked good today. So, you know, you try to find some kind of target date. You know, maybe Thursday's a good time, but we'll see. We'll see how he reacts after the ice, and then how he is tomorrow. But, you know, I think there's a good shot that he can maybe play Thursday. I'm not saying he is, but that's something that maybe it's in the works for us.
You mentioned you don't like 11-7, so would you go another way if Dak doesn't go tomorrow?
Yeah, I'll talk to Patrick. Yeah. If he doesn't go, we're going to have to probably call somebody up.
You mentioned the possibility of a conditioning stint. Sounds like not likely then for Dak?
No, I don't think so. He's looked pretty good out there. Even we were doing some drills in the morning early. His hands look pretty good around the net. I think I'd rather him play, whether I get him in 10, 12 minutes, than go down to Abbey. I think that's what I think we're going to do.
Is that a process where even once you get him in, you'll have to ramp him up in terms of minutes and see what he can handle?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, you continue to do the work on the ice, but we'll see. It goes game to game, too. You know, Dak plays penalty kill. Might probably get some, you know, I don't know if I'll get him on the power play second unit. You know, he plays in a lot of different roles, so I want to manage his minutes.
But are you saying he's not going to play tomorrow night?
No, I don't think he'll play tomorrow night.
So, as a coach, I know you deal with the unexpected all the time, but how surprised were you after those last couple of games in California to see how, especially the third period, but even the start, do you get surprised at times that things change so much between games?
No, I like I said, I think really you got to learn how to, you know, I know some guys were tired, okay, getting home late, but you got to learn how to play tired. And when you're tired, you shorten your shifts, one thing, but you stick to the game plan. And I thought we had some opportunities to stick with the game plan, and we went off kilter, and that's what happens. McDavid smells blood, and he takes over the game in the third period. So, like I said, every game is a learning lesson to us, and I think starting on time is one of them. You know, the first 5 minutes, we wanted to play fast, but we started taking the puck back. So right away, you're on your heels. And then, obviously, the second period, they got to call a timeout because we're all over them because what we're doing works. But somehow, you know, then somebody makes a mistake, it's in your net. And then, so I think, for me, it's learning how to play mentally when you're tired. And I think you have to stick to the game plan.
Where is JT with his game right now in your eyes, he says he's trying to, he's got another level he can get back to. We know that early on in the season he was dealing with something, training camp, and then, you know, not taking face-offs, wherever that was, Philadelphia maybe.
Yeah, well, he's hard on himself. You know, he knows there's another level. Yeah, we all know there's another level. You know, the last game was probably his worst game of the year. He'll tell you that. But he's had some good moments for us. You know, he'll round it out. I'm not worried about him. But what I do love, JT, some guys think they're playing well and they're okay. He doesn't. That's what I love about JT. You know, and I shouldn't even say playing well, because I think he's playing fine. And he's trying to find that upper level like everybody else, like our whole team. It's no different than other guys.
Do you have an update on Brock?
I don't.
Would you guys ever give us an update on Brock, or is this just
going I think it's day to day. I haven't really talked to him today, to be honest with you. I haven't. Because these things, it's a day-to-day thing. You feel better, like, I don't know.
Okay. What's your thinking with Lekaramäki with Miller instead of Pettersson? Because obviously he played a lot with Pettersson in the preseason.
I don't know. I just rather have Gars back with Petey and Jake. I think Millsy's forechecking, being able to get the puck, like how he gets the puck to Brock. You know, Lettermacki's got a great shot. And, you know, Seuss is that, you know, that Swiss Army knife that can play that, you know, defensive game if we need him to help out. So take less pressure on Lettermacki, Johnny. So I just want Johnny to just go play the game and be who he is. Like, we had these two-on-ones he's trying to pass to everybody. That's not his job. I want him to shoot the puck. Like, these young guys, I always laugh. Like, even Baines last year, he had a couple 2-on-1s, but he's trying to pass. I want these young guys to be selfish. Shoot. That's what he is. He's a shooter. Shoot the puck every time, and Millsy won't be mad at you if you shoot. Trust me.
That is Rick Tocchet saying, Lekaramäki, go out there, do what you do, shoot the puck. Good to hear. We were talking about that, right? Like, hey, there's a reason you're in the NHL. There's a reason you were a first-round pick. It's a large part because of your shooting. Go out and do that. Don't try to be too unselfish out there.
Yeah, and it's tough. Like, you have a young kid coming in, and it's not like he's going to be playing with a player that is very good and isn't a intimidating presence as well, right? Like, JT takes the game very serious, and you can see it on the bench. Like, he's a fiery, emotional guy, and that's one of the reasons why he is who he is. Like, that makes him him. But it's important, again, like, that's why you have those early conversations where, I'll use myself because I was a pretty fiery guy as well. When I play with a young guy, I'm like, if I'm getting mad and I'm kind of yelling it on the bench and stuff, I'm like, you'll know if it's to you. Like, I'll talk to you. But if I'm yelling, it's not at you.
Right.
Like, you just need to know that. Like, I just need to let off some steam.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so you just make sure that Lekaramäki knows the situation. But past that, like, you know, shoot or shoot.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah.
Like, and let it go.
You know, you're like JT Miller, great shooter in his own right. Great playmaker, though, right? That's a lot of what he does. He will set you up, he will put you in positions. And I think that's got to be a key part of the message to Lekaramäki, right? Like, hey, if he puts you in a spot, that's your job. He's going to be a lot more mad if you don't shoot it than if you let it fly from that spot.
Exactly. And it does help that he played, what was it, three exhibition games?
Yes.
He had the 3 points in 3 exhibition games. Like, he already shows or had shown that he's not shy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's going to play his game. He doesn't really know how else to play, which is a good thing, right? Like, you want him to do what you brought him in and drafted him to do.
No doubt about it, and it looks like he'll get that opportunity to make his NHL debut tomorrow when they take on the Calgary Flames. Landon, thank you as always for coming in on a holiday Monday. Really appreciate it. I'm sure we'll be doing this again soon, man. Thank you.
Sounds good. I'm still waiting for that third here, though.
That is
one
true.
Of these days, I'm going to get the whole package.
We got to make that happen at some point here. All right, that does it for us. We're back with more Canucks Talk tomorrow on Sportsnet 650.